Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And good afternoon, Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. You can find us at stevejonesshow.com, Twitter handle at stevejonespsu. Give us a follow and like us on Facebook. Of course, our shows are also available as a podcast. You can subscribe to the Steve Jones Show podcast on the Apple Podcast app, iTunes, and Google Play. If you do listen to us on iTunes, don't hesitate to leave us a review. And of course, our email inbox available anytime for you. And drop us a line, stevejones at wkok.com. Sean Carey here, and Steve on his way into the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. As we count down to Penn State, Georgia State coming up Saturday night, 7:30 here on WKOK, head coach James Franklin had his weekly press conference in the media room at Beaver Stadium earlier today. So we'll get some quotes and snippets from Coach as we move through the week. And of course, Coach will be talking with Steve Thursday night here on WKOK, weekly coaches show featuring James Franklin from Primanti Brothers in downtown yes. State College Thursday night. Of course, it's 6:05 here. Yeah.
And, of course, we'll have our high school football roundtable on Thursday as well, which includes,
the gang
obviously,
of four.
Yes. The brilliance of Pat O'Brien, the brilliance of Steve Williams, the outstanding work of Greg Wetzel, and the ramblings of the suit. So, it was...
Have you noticed I've put him last in the lineup? I strategically put him in last. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I noticed that. I also noticed that he's on during the commercial break.
Okay, you're done now. Go back to the office. We're good. Okay. We're good.
Well, tell everybody about the attitude he gave you last week about the segment.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of like just walked in, you know, the whole diva thing, and you know, he had a meeting at 3 o'clock. Was deeply concerned he was not going to be back in time. And I turned my head, and who comes in around the corner at 3:40? No, 3:35. It was him. So.
Well, he gives it the employer A thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember that?
He goes, I got to go back to my full time job now. I was like, oh, okay. If you need me, you know where I'll be. I'll be right here in the chair. I'm not hard to find.
Here's a shocker. We can do the segment without you.
Although it'll be tough this week. We'll have to get his input since we got the Rally in the Valley Trophy on the line Friday night since we have hit rivalry week between Shikellamy and Sewens Grove.
What, Pat, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, we could fill that up by putting Ryan Brandt on.
I know we could get Ryan on.
So explain to me the part we need him.
And I know sooner or later we could get Zach Showers on. Because actually we started to have Zach on last year on the Seals postgame show. He's done a fantastic job. We figured, hey, if we got a stat man in the booth, let's get him on the air and he can share the numbers that he's crunched during the game. And he's getting more and more comfortable on the microphone. We could get and he is a huge fan of this show, big time Penn State fan. He'd love to be on the show.
Well, Zach would love to have Zach on the show.
Absolutely. I mean, he'd love to be on the show. This would be like a bucket list moment for Zach.
We can get both of our listeners on. I'm all for it.
It would up his status in his own house.
Ooh.
I got to start somewhere.
I can't believe that this show ups its status, but that's fine.
No, it will. It will.
Well, we got a lot of good stuff going on. Adam Amin's going to be on the show. Thursday?
Hopefully tomorrow for Adam.
Tomorrow.
Since he has ESPN TV duties on Friday, I figured Thursday he'd be flying or already in coaches' meetings, so we'll shoot for Adam. We'll shoot to get Adam on tomorrow. So
good. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, and Adam will be doing radio duties for ESPN on Sunday. He'll be in the Berg for Steelers-Vikings. So he's a busy guy. He'll have some college football Friday night and then head to the Berg after that.
Oh, good. Yeah, we'll talk to him about that as well, because we got Neil Coulong today. It was not... I'll be honest with you, the Steelers won the game, but it'd be like,
And I'll tell you what, though, watching the Vikings in a very convincing win over the Saints, I'm a little concerned for this Sunday. I'm not going to lie. I think Neil's a little concerned, too. I saw some of his tweets during the game last night.
Yeah, I mean, it's an issue because they looked good last night. I thought the Vikings looked terrific last night. And now, how about is it Sergio Dips?
I actually didn't catch any of his reports, the sideline reporter for the Broncos-Chargers game last night, but he literally broke Twitter last night. I'm thinking, okay, did he make kind of a mistake, or did he freeze on camera? Or
bring it up online. I think if you bring it up online, then you can play it.
Okay. Yeah, it's got to be on YouTube.
He's only 29 years old. He is fluent, obviously, in Spanish. He works for ESPN Deportes. He's from the University of Monterey. And he is obviously fluent in English, but obviously Spanish is his first language. Now, you're on the sideline. It is not an easy job. You have a limited amount of time. You don't have a teleprompter. There is no script. And you must, in an ad-lib form, be concise, get out the information you need to, and then send it back upstairs. So it's not easy at all. And he was involved in last night's broadcast with Beth Mowins and Rex Ryan, and he was on the sideline for the Broncos and the Chargers game. And remember, Denver is a lot like a college atmosphere. The stadium is loud, it's energetic, you can barely hear yourself think. And he was in that spot last night where they sent it down to the sideline. Now, to his credit, he has had a fabulous sense of humor about this whole thing. Now, do we have it, Sean?
Let's see. I did find Bob Lee defended him earlier today on OTL.
Oh, there's no need to defend him. There's no need to defend him at all. None. I hope he gets a bunch of opportunities. You're 29, and you're in this exciting spot, and it just didn't come out the way he hoped. But you know what? He looks good on camera. I know he has a lot of accomplishments along the way. He's going to get other chances. There's no need to defend him. I admire the fact that Bob Lee wanted to defend him, but to be honest with you, I'm sitting here saying, hey, you know what? If they were to put this guy on Mac games and things like that, I bet he'd do really, really well. And then the next time he got a Monday Night Football shot, he'd be terrific at it.
Here we go. Found a little 30-second clip. This was when Beth introduced him for the first time last night on the telecast. Here we go.
Headline for the Chargers, and here's Sergio Dip.
Beth, Coach, it's a pleasure to be with you guys here on the field from up close, just watching Coach Ben. Joseph, from here, you watch him now on the screen. This diversity in his background is helping him a lot tonight. Quarterback at Colorado, defensive back in the NFL, and here he is having the time of his life this night, making his head coaching debut.
Yeah. I don't think there's really nothing much wrong with that. You know, just giving you the basics. I mean, granted, it's stuff we already...
He's a little discombobulated. Yeah. It's okay. So what? He's going to be fine.
Yeah, I agree.
He's going to be just fine. Oh, and there's no need to defend him. And his sense of humor about it. Sense of humor about it's been great. I guess on Twitter he's been a sensation because he's been self-deprecating. Good for him. He'll be fine.
He sounded a little nervous, a little bit, but
a little. Yeah, but, yeah. Oh, yeah. Very nervous. No doubt. No, and he's 29. He's on a huge stage. He should be. That's fine.
I wouldn't call that a meltdown at all. It was just, you know. Like,
well, he started, well, I don't know. I think it's the part about, like, going into diversity and all. He, like, wait. Then you went to Colorado and it was, okay. We're not really quite forming a full. it doesn't matter, though. I hope he gets a million chances because the way he's handled this has been great. All right. Penn State football schedules. These are Big Ten schedules for 20 and 21. All right. They've got already on the schedule. Okay. In 2020, okay, Penn State has two non-conference games to be scheduled in 2020. They're at Virginia Tech on September 12th. Northwestern will be at home at Michigan October 3rd. Iowa at home on the 17th. Ohio State at home on the 24th. At Indiana the 31st. At Nebraska the 7th. Michigan State the 14th. Maryland the 21st. And then this is where they get into that, where Rutgers is the last game for 2 years. Okay? On the 28th. In the 2021 season, now listen to the couple wrinkles in here in the 2021 season. At Wisconsin on September 4th. See, now they're starting to spread out the schedule a little bit. At Wisconsin on September 4th. Then Ball State on the 11th. Home with Auburn on the 18th. At Iowa on the 9th. Home with Illinois on the 16th. At Michigan State on the 23rd, home with Indiana on the 30th, November 6th at Maryland, Michigan the 13th at home, at Ohio State the 20th, and then Rutgers at home on the 27th. Now, here are the wrinkles in here. The wrinkles are at Wisconsin, there's going to be a game before that, right? There's one non-conference game to be scheduled, so there's going to be a game before that in the last week of August. Right. So, but the second game of the season is at Wisconsin in the conference. So there's a wrinkle. Okay? That's the Big Ten trying to take advantage of trying to put some big stuff at the front of the schedule. All right. And then notice where the Ohio State game is. Michigan's the 13th. At Ohio State's the 20th. By putting Michigan and Ohio State in November, what does that do, Sean? It gets the two games away from the World Series, which Fox has.
It increases your chances of primetime games.
All right. Yep. And why is the Ohio State game this year at 3:30?
Bingo.
Because of the World Series.
And both on Fox.
All right.
Yep.
So they got one more conference game. That's 20 and 21. Hey, your second game of the year is at Wisconsin, and then your fourth game of the year is Auburn. Okay. Yeah. I'm impressed. So your second game of the year is at Wisconsin, huge game, and then your fourth game of the year is Auburn. All right. Either that or else the September 4th game is the opener at Wisconsin. And September 25th might be the date that you play another game. It's got to be September 20th. It's either September 25th or October 1st. You got another non-conference game in there. So the Wisconsin game on the 4th is the opener. There won't be a game in front of it.
2021, correct.
Yep. All right. So, we will take a break. Back with more in a moment. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. You know how much I enjoy wasting my time on non-stories, right? Yeah. I don't like wasting my time on non-stories. I'll give you an example of two great non-stories that have been made a big deal of in the last couple of weeks. Let's start with this. The Red Sox using Apple Watches on sign stealing. Okay, you want to know how huge a story that is? They'll be fined and docked a draft choice, which I think Major League Baseball will just do right away and just get it over with.
How high of a round of a draft choice would you think?
Oh, who cares? Yeah. First round, second round, who cares? You know, it's a Major League draft. You know, this isn't the NFL draft. It's a Major League draft.
I think just because of the fact that signal stealing has been going on since the start of the game, maybe that's something to do with not being a sport.
What, you don't think they're trying to steal Penn State signals on the sideline when they're signaling in plays?
Sure are.
Of course they are. Everybody is. Right? If you're dumb enough to keep giving the same sign, then you're gonna be then you deserve to have them stolen. But it doesn't matter. It's a non-story. The story is, okay, we accused you of it. We did an investigation. We think you did it. Okay, fine. You're gonna be fined and you're gonna be docked a draft choice. Ooh, okay. It's a non-story. It's a non-story. It's like, okay, it's a footnote. The other one is what James said after the game about Akron and Pitt. It's a non-story. What's the story there? That he takes the same approach every week and their job is to go through and win as many games as possible? That's it? I mean, what does the Pitt game mean if they lose this week to Georgia State? Penn State's a national program now. They aren't a regional program. They're a national program. And when you are a national program, right, and you are in the hunt and in the thick of trying to win a national championship, right, these are, in their own small ways, mini playoff games each and every week. You need to keep winning. It doesn't matter what the label of the team happens to be. Well, it turned out it was Pitt. Now, to the fans, that is a huge deal, especially the fans that live in Western Pennsylvania. That is a huge deal, and I absolutely appreciate that. I absolutely appreciate that. But there's also a reality to it. The reality to it is Penn State's got to go to the next game. And they need to beat Georgia State the same way that they beat Pitt last week and they beat Akron. And should they beat Georgia State, then they have to go to Iowa and they got to do the same thing, and that starts the conference season. And winning the Big Ten is a major avenue to getting yourself in a position to be in the college football playoff. I mean, it's an absolute non-story unless you're so desperate that you need the ratings to rile people up over statements people make. I find that stuff to sit there and go, really? I mean, you want to know what I did on Sunday this week, Sean? The exact same thing I did last Sunday before Pitt.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. By the way, Sean, you're saying the Phillies have a game with the Mets next year on August the 19th under the category of TBA.
That is correct. They released their 2018 schedule today. And last month at Bowman Field during the Little League Classic, there was some talk. Yeah, no-brainer since the Crosscutters are there. They're tied in with the Phillies. Only be appropriate if there's going to be another Little League Classic. The Phillies could be involved in that game. And yeah, it looks like a to-be-determined Phillies-Mets, and it is listed as a home game for Sunday, yes, August the 19th, 2018. So, looking good. That could be the game at Bowman Field next year for another Little League Classic.
There you go. All right. This day in sports history, 1979, Carl Yastrzemski of the Red Sox became the first American League player to get 3,000 career hits and 400 career home runs. Of course, Cal Ripken Jr. also has now accomplished that. 1984, Michael Jordan signed a 7-year contract to play basketball with the Chicago Bulls. I think A-Rod's also done that. His entire career was in the American League, too. 1984, Dwight Gooden of the Mets set a rookie strikeout record, 251 of the season. 2002, a judge announced that a jury would have to decide who would get the ball that Barry Bonds hit for his record 73rd home run. The ownership of the ball with an estimated value of $1 million was being disputed between two men that had been in the bleachers. Oh, for goodness sakes. Okay, take the ball, give it to him. All right. It's a ball. Oh, and if you're so up on the money, then take the million and split it, $500,000. The ball. I don't get that stuff. I really don't. But that's me. Rick DiPietro in 2006 of the Islanders signed a 15-year contract worth $67.5 million. Yep, not there now. All right, so that should have brought him to 2021. All right, let's bring in Neil Coulong. Now we're going to talk about the Steelers a little bit. Not exactly the grade-A performance, but a win on Sunday. Neil, welcome.
I'm happy they got out of the stadium with a win. It was, you know, it's funny. I was just speaking to somebody in Minneapolis on their show a little bit earlier today. If you were to put Sam Bradford in a Browns uniform in that game, I think Cleveland wins by at least one score. I don't think Pittsburgh played well at all in many phases of the game. They just didn't look ready. And in a lot of ways, it's kind of like, you go back to the you know, Steelers on the road the last couple seasons, you got that same feeling from that game. At the same time, you almost kind of wonder if this wasn't really just more or less a fifth preseason game. I'm not saying necessarily they approached it that way, but it was like, this isn't going to be, you know, the full extent of this team, right? I mean, they're a lot more talented than what we just saw. Yet at the same time, we saw seven sacks, almost entirely caused by a rookie quarterback who just refused to move from the pocket or out of the way of any Steelers defender who happened to be coming in toward him. Top to bottom, it was just kind of undisciplined. It was sloppy. It really just kind of left a bad taste in your mouth if you were watching it from Pittsburgh's perspective. And they've got a lot to work on. They're playing a much better team next week, as we saw last night.
Yeah, no question about that. But, you know, isn't this like a fifth preseason game for everybody? Because nobody's played in the preseason. Nobody.
Yeah, that's actually an excellent point. And this is kind of the theory that I'm coming up with. It seems like the play in week one is getting worse and worse each year. And it's easy to say it's because the now not so new CBA, but the most current CBA that they have, it took out some of, you know, practice during training camp. But, well, how many practices do they need to make them look like they're actually playing in week one? You know, I'm not sure what that answer is. It just doesn't seem like any team is really consistent. There's always these weird kind of fluky things that come up. The best way that I can put it, and this isn't, you know, really connected to anything at all, I got bounced on week one in my survivor pool for the sixth year in a row.
Yeah.
6 years in a row since the CBA was signed, I can't pick a team that will absolutely win a game the first week of the season.
Right.
And a lot of it is just because you have no idea what these teams are. Nobody really has a good sense of anything. And a lot of it, you know, the Steelers' biggest issue over the last couple of years has been the fact that they've carried that sort of malaise with them over the first 8 weeks or so of the season. You know, these 4-4, 2-6 starts that they have all the time, and then they tear everything up at the end of the year. So it's almost like they play to kind of pace themselves throughout the whole season, and they never get off to like a roaring start anymore. The best we saw was 2014 when they were, you know, kicking five kinds of stuff out of the Browns in the first half, and then they end up almost losing that game because they fell apart in the second half. You just don't get like a great, solid, all-around performance from this team in their first game anymore.
Did Le'Veon Bell look like he had a feel for the game in the opener?
Not at all. Not at all. Maybe he was playing lacrosse all off season. I'm not sure, but he didn't look even a shell of himself. To a point where it's like, is this even 26? That's not the guy that we know.
Right.
He looks good. It didn't necessarily look like he was moving slow or anything, but he was really hesitant. He didn't have the same kind of, you know, aggressive mentality that he had. You saw that a lot in his routes. He ran out for routes. He looked very slow, kind of tentative. It made me wonder if, you know, something happened that they completely overhauled all of their passing scheme, and he wasn't sure whether he should run in or out, or if it wasn't something to do with his groin. You have to kind of wonder, is he fully healthy? That to me, that was the question that kind of came out of that game. He wasn't good. I don't think the offensive line blocked particularly well for him either, so you can kind of see how he might kind of, you know, fall down a little bit. And along with that, you know, a lot of penalties. It took away a lot of, you know, pretty good gains, not just for Bell, but for a lot of guys. You take all that out, though, on a per-carry basis, he just didn't look even close to the player that we're used to seeing.
Defensively, how did you feel about – let's start with Watt. There's a lot of things about Watt people liked in the preseason. What has allowed him to make a quick move from college to the pro game and seem like he hasn't missed a beat?
Yeah, I'll be honest. You've heard me not exactly – extolling his virtues up until this point. Mm-hmm. I was really impressed with the way he played. He looked a lot more advanced than I figured that he would. His first sack, that the legitimate sack that he got off Joe Thomas, he put a real nice set of moves on him. And you don't see a whole lot of rookie pass rushers able to, you know, kind of go from one thing to another, especially when you're beating a future Hall of Famer the way that he did. That was a great move. It was a great sack, and it really makes you kind of excited. What are they going to be able to do from a pass rush perspective when you get Dupree back? You know, can Dupree make that same kind of leap? He probably started off a bit behind the curve compared to Watt, but Watt really seems to have taken well to the amount of reps that he got in training camp and the preseason. And he put that on the field. I thought he looked really good.
And it's not insignificant. It's a guy like Joe Thomas, who was the ultimate pro's pro at left tackle, that everybody wants to be their left tackle.
Yep, you know, it's James Harrison's first start, I believe, week one start was against the Browns, Thomas's rookie year. One, that's how old I am now. and Harrison, of course, too. But I think Harrison got shut out. So, you know, not that that's really worth anything. It's just kind of an interesting parallel between the two. Thomas has been around that long. And to see and still play at a pretty high level, and to see Watt really kind of take to that challenge in week one, pick up another sack and make a real nice play on an interception. Defensive rookie of the week is named, I saw. So, you know, definitely worthy of that distinction, and you hope for better things coming forward.
All right. What did you think of Deshaun Kaiser?
Yeah, there were things that I liked about him. You know, I don't think anybody ever had an issue with his arm. He's got a great arm.
He's
a joy to watch throw the ball. You know, that's really why he's probably a second-round pick after kind of a spotty collegiate career. But there are a lot of good things that you saw with him, except for the fact that he took seven sacks. I mean, he's the modern-day Rob Johnson. Remember him from the Bills?
Oh,
that guy was
throwing
the ball down the field.
Yeah.
Guys, after a while, it was just like, dude, you've got to do something. The only time you move is when you went straight into the defender. You're not trying to juke him. You're not trying to get out of the pocket.
Right.
He's raw. I think they know that. He's going to need reps. He's going to need experience. Eventually, he's going to, you know, kind of acclimate himself to everything and put all of it together. It really seems like he made a very strong, conscious effort to keep his eyes down the field, and he definitely did do that. He refused to check the ball down. In several situations, he had a receiver within 2-3 yards of him as the pocket was collapsing. You like that kind of mentality. He's not going to quit on it, but there will be times that you do have to quit, or you're going to get sacked. He's lucky he only turned the ball over once, in my opinion.
Which then it leads me to the next question. They've got Sam Bradford next with the Vikings coming in. Bradford was brilliant in the Monday night game, the victory over New Orleans. What kind of challenge is that going to bring to the table for this Steelers team and a secondary I'm still not sure about?
Yeah, there are a couple things with this, and this is what I would definitely caution Steelers fans right now is, one, you had Bradford participate in everything throughout the entire offseason. They've got a large part of their offense back, and they actually have a semblance of an offensive line, which they didn't last year. I don't know if you ever watched that team play last year.
Yeah.
Their offensive line is probably the worst I've ever seen at the professional level. They were horrendous.
Yeah.
And Bradford still completed 70% of his passes or something like that. As much, you know, grief as people give Bradford, he is a very good NFL quarterback. And you saw it last night. They gave him time. He's got a couple weapons out there that he can use. I don't know how many games I've seen a quarterback play better than what we saw Bradford last night. He was lights out. I think he only had a couple incompletions, maybe like 3 or 4. Two of them were drops. So you're looking at a guy that played pretty much a flawless game, and he destroyed that team. I think the Steelers have a better secondary than the Saints do, although I'm not entirely sure how much better after watching the game Sunday. Joe Hayden's not healthy. I was talking to you about that before. He's not ready yet. You could tell teams are going to, you know, kind of run double moves on him, cut in front of him pretty often at the sticks. He gave up, I think, like 105 passer rating against Deshaun Kaiser. You know, Bradford's going to tear that apart. They're in trouble. They're going to have to get after Bradford as much as humanly. Well, their secondary is not going to be good enough to stick with those guys down the field if he has 5 seconds to throw the ball.
How flat did Roethlisberger seem?
It flat, uninspired. It just, there wasn't any real pop. You know, I think a lot of it just seemed to be a lack of continuity. You know, you put Bryant on the field, which I don't think is really being talked about as much as it probably should be, for the first time in a very long time. along with Bell not having done anything really with the team except for practice this week. You can see where some of that comes from. Ben, overall, his numbers were pretty good. The interception, it was, I'd probably credit the defender who tipped the pass on that.
Oh, yeah, no, that happens, yeah.
A very nice play. Would have been a tight throw, a tight catch for, I forget what receiver it was that was behind it, but I thought he looked pretty good overall, but it was just, there was something just not moving with the entire offense, and you tend to look at the quarterback for something like that. That touchdown to James was a great throw, the mm-hmm. first one, or was it the second one? He put it off to his right.
It was the second one, yeah.
Really tight window, just a great throw. He didn't have a lot of chances. I mean, they shot themselves in the foot a huge amount. I mean, it's just a ton of penalties put them, you know, second and long on almost every possession. You know, the stat that stood out to me was probably the fact that they only had one rushing first down.
Well, here's the stat:
completions in 16 first downs. You know, that's not good.
Here's the stat that stuck out to me: they had a blocked punt. To me, that, you know,
yep.
I mean, they don't get that. I don't think they won the game. So.
Nope. And that's, you have to consider too, you're playing a rookie quarterback who's not even a prize prospect. You know, this isn't mm-hmm. Andrew Luck in his first game. He's mm-hmm. got a ways to go. I like his future, don't get me wrong, but yeah. It's not going to be anytime soon. They let him hang around for a while, and in the end, you had to have a pretty right. remarkable catch by Antonio Brown, kind of a heave and pray, to you know, convert a second and long. Otherwise, you're looking at, you know, probably another run, and you're giving him the ball, chance to tie. That shouldn't have happened.
Neil, always a pleasure. Thanks for your insight. Appreciate it.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong, USA Today. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Thanks to Neil Coulong for being on the show with us today. Adam Amin coming up tomorrow. Next week we'll have Tony Knopp on the show. Also working on Thursday, see if we can get Sean Elliott, the Georgia State head coach. Why not? They've had 2 weeks to prepare. Quarterback Connor Manning, by the way, is transfer from Utah. I watched the tape. Throws a good ball. They run a lot of RPO stuff. And Winchester, the backup quarterback, will get in there too. But he throws a good ball. And they've got some really good receivers. Hart, number 18, is really good. Smith, 17, really good. Taz Bateman, the running back, is good. I'm not going to sit there and tell you he's great. He's good. But yeah, that's the thumbnail in that. But defensively, Sullivan, number 10, the corner. He has 6 career picks. Not bad. And the and then the middle linebacker, Payne, 42, is a pretty good player. Last year they played Wisconsin, third game of the year. They only won 3 games last year. They won 3 games the whole season. Well, they went to Wisconsin the third game of last year. You know what the final score was? 23-17. I think all of us have a pretty good idea of how good Wisconsin was last year. So, look, they can have moments. They've also got a brand new place. They are the ones that moved into Turner Field. They moved into Turner Field after the Braves left for Cobb County. And you look at the tape, they play Tennessee State there in their opener. And
you look at that and you say, you know what, that looks pretty good.
Yeah, there's some overhead shots of that field a couple weeks ago I found on social media as the season started. They did a really great job. I mean, look where it was 20 years ago. I mean, that's where the hub of the Summer Olympics took place, you know, 21 years ago, and now they call it their home. They really did a great job converting it into a true football field.
Yeah, man, they've done a nice job with it. Now, I actually have been to the Georgia State campus. You're stunned, aren't you? But it is true. I have been there because Penn State in 2001 was in the Sweet 16, and they had to have a place to practice to get ready for Temple, and they practiced at Georgia State on their court. And this is back when Lefty Driesell was the head coach at Georgia State. So I actually have been there before. So... just a side note. But Georgia State, they're in downtown Atlanta. And I think, look, I think that's... Penn State had done a satellite camp down there. Okay. Well, the satellite camp, that opened the door, I think, to have this game be put on their schedule. And, it, you know, they'll, you know, Georgia State will get some money out of it. And that'll be important for them. But for Penn State, you got to win the game. And again, this, you know, the approach that James Franklin talks about, you can't just sit there and, you know, throw all your eggs into a basket and go, okay, this is it. This is the game. Well, last week was a really important game for them, no doubt about it. The fans assigned the importance of the game. You know, and as fans, they are absolutely entitled to assign the importance of a game to anything because they're paying money. So if they think it's, you know, that is a huge game, great, so be it. Completely understand it. I mean, you don't have to explain the series to me. I go back to 1975 here. I think I got it. Okay. But I also have another part, too. And again, this is something I delved into last week. I have nothing to do with winning and losing. But I do have something to do with, am I ready to go on Saturday to give you my best? Right? That is where there's a similarity. And what do I do to get ready to attempt to give you my best? So that you, the listener, are not ripped off. And so I don't sit there and say, oh, it's Pitt, here we go. I'm going to throw a lot more into this one. I throw the same into every game. And I've always said that, because you never know what kind of game you're going to get. You never know. They're all different. Penn State plays Bucknell in basketball. I throw the exact same preparation to that as Michigan State basketball. No different. Because I found a formula that, for me, I think works. Where I feel when I'm done, I've been able to maximize the time and maximize the information. And I may only use 1% to 2% of it. But the 1% to 2% changes every week. Penn State hadn't had a safety in 7 years. But when the moment came up, I was ready to tell you when the last time was, right at the end of the play, and not have to wait to have a note handed to me. That's just being prepared and ready for it. So I understand what James Franklin means, because I get ready for every game exactly the same way, and he's trying to import that to his team so that when Saturday comes, no matter who it is, they're ready.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.